Welcome to the podcast today. Now, when we talk about our midlife health, rarely do we think about or do we discuss things like the health of our skin, our ears, our eyes, but especially our oral health. But we are going to remedy that today. Now, I've heard it said that our oral health is a direct mirror of what is going on in our body. It's kind of a mirror of our overall health. And so I think it is imperative that we be taking the best care of our teeth, our gums, our mouths as we age. And to talk with us through what we can learn from our oral health and the best offense as we age is my dentist from here in Louisville, Kentucky, Dr. Jamie Meyer. Jamie graduated from the University of Louisville School of Dentistry and prides herself on going the extra distance with her patients, as is proven by her just agreeing to be with me here today on the podcast. And I will mention that she is just weeks away from having her second child. And so I feel very blessed that she is here today. So let's get into it. Hey, friend, welcome to your safe place to begin redesigning midlife. Do you know deep inside that it is time to start focusing on your health and wellness, but have no idea where to start? Do you wake up every morning saying, I'm starting today, and end it with, I'll start again tomorrow? I'm Leslie, and when I turned 50, I felt the same and longed for some sense of self-control and new confidence in who I was becoming in midlife. I finally realized that the change I needed was up to me. In this podcast, you are going to find everything you need to build your healthiest midlife today, to live happier and longer tomorrow. So embrace being a beginner again, open your heart to change, and let's get to redesigning. Hey, Dr. Meyer, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm very excited to have you here. And like, you know, this is a podcast and it's audio, but little pieces of video may appear here and there. You look very beautiful today. And I know you are so close to having your second baby. So
the home stretch.
Yeah. You've made it, basically. As I was thinking about what we could talk about and the focus of this podcast, I have to admit, a full disclosure, as I was growing up, I never liked going to the dentist. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably not the only one out there. And So there is no way I would have chosen to become a dentist. What made you decide that you wanted to do this?
You know, it's really interesting. Like, I feel like at least half the world had a terrible dentist experience as a child. And it's just like, just associates negative things with going to the dentist. But I was really fortunate. Like, my pediatric dentist, when I was a kid, I thought he was the coolest person in the world. And it's interesting because like, I had to have so much dental work when I was a kid, like none of my baby teeth became loose on their own. I had them like all extracted by him. And I just thought that was part of life. And like, it was fine. You know, he never hurt me or anything, but I hear all these horror stories like, oh, my dentist didn't numb me and took my tooth out or whatever. So a lot of people have those same, you know, thoughts about the dentist. But for me, I had a great, I guess, dental experience as a kid, but I don't really have this like glamorous story of what made me become a dentist. A lot of people, like in dental school, the first day of dental school, they'll say like, raise your hand if your dad was a dentist. And like, at least half the class raises their hand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, like my dad wasn't a dentist or anything like that. And I wasn't like born obsessed with teeth, but, I always like as a kid just thought I wanted to be some sort of doctor. And I always carried that with me and loved studying, was kind of a nerd and that sort of thing, and thought I wanted to be like some sort of physician, like a pediatrician or something. But as I got older, like going through education, I shadowed a bunch of physicians, and I actually really felt like their work got to be pretty heavy and sad a lot of times. And I would shadow, I mean, there's a lot of like hard news you can give people or whatever, but you know, people don't really love the dentist, but the worst thing you're going to tell them is probably that they're going to lose a tooth, and that's okay. You know, there's ways to fix that. And I really liked that it was, you know, for the most part, pretty lighthearted. And I liked that, you know, you could build relationships with your patients because for the most part, like if you're someone who goes to the dentist twice a year, every year, most of your life, you're going to see your dentist more than you see your, you know, every other doctor, really your primary care. Right. I mean, when you get older, you're, you know, you should get regular checkups with your primary care, but for a lot of your life, you're not really seeing any other doctor that regularly. So
yeah.
I did like that aspect of it. You can like see your patients, you know, grow over time and like really get to know them. So that attracted me to it. And when I was in college, I just like took a job at a dental office as a front desk during the summer and shadowed a really great dentist, and she had seemed like everything, you know, made. She had a great work-life balance. She was a mom, but she was also just like a boss at work, and I really admired her. And so I just kind of picked it and ran with it, but I didn't know when I chose dentistry like that I would actually like really love teeth and like fixing teeth. I just chose it for like more practical reasons, really. Like I thought the career would be good, but turns out that I actually like love the artistic part of dentistry, like, you know, fixing a smile or fixing a tooth, and there's so many ways to do that and that sort of thing. So it really is a perfect fit for me, but I didn't have like a moment where I was like, ah, this makes me want to be a dentist or anything like that. It just kind of evolved over time. But it's worked for me. It's been great. And I know a lot of people say, I can't believe who would want to be a dentist. Why would you want to be a dentist? And always, it's not as bad as you think it is. You know, it actually, there are some great, great parts of being a dentist, like I mentioned. So I've really had a great experience choosing this path. So
that's
it's been
awesome.
Good.
I will tell you, as I was growing up, I don't know if this is one of the reasons why I would never have chosen being a dentist, but I grew up down the street from my dentist. So like every Halloween, we got toothbrushes and we got floss or we got apples or something like that. And I was kind of like, oh man, wah, wah. I don't want to be that person on the block.
Right. No,
yeah.
I won't hand brushes to my neighborhood kids. Like, I just can't do it. I know that, like, oh, the dentist, of course. I just load them up with candy. I'll fix their teeth. It's fine.
That's awesome. So, like I mentioned in the intro, I've heard that the mouth and the health of the mouth structures really are kind of a window into the health of the individual. So when someone comes in to see you and you're maybe seeing them for the first time or the first time in a long time, what are you looking for? And what is what you see? What does it tell you about what's going on with them?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great point about oral health being a window to your systemic health. A lot of people don't think of it that way at all.
No. I think a lot of people are even surprised by that.
Yeah. And honestly, like there's so much research going on right now, and there's more literature that's coming out every year about how your oral health is connected to your systemic health. I mean, even just in the time that I've been in practice, there have been so many, you know, new literature that has come out about that. But basically for me, when I see a new patient or someone I haven't seen in a long time, there's a lot that we consider. You know, we want to look at their medical history. And I think we'll talk more about that in depth, but the medical history will tell you a lot about someone. Like if they're on a ton of medications, they're diabetic, they've had a history of cancer, things like that, that's going to change the way I view what's healthy for them. Because some people, you know, if they're uncontrolled diabetic, they're, you know, their oral health is going to be harder to maintain. But also, so we can touch on that a little more later, but we look at x-rays, like from kind of a clinical standpoint, we look at x-rays. X-rays tell us a lot about their oral health because we're not only just looking at the teeth, we're looking at the bone level, like what holds the teeth in. Because if there's a lot of bacteria in the mouth, then there's going to be lower bone levels. So that's really important. And then we do a periodontal exam on a new patient and really every patient, checking to see the health of the gum tissue. So basically, we want the gum tissue to be really firm and pink and tight to the tooth. And for someone who doesn't have the best oral health, that's not going to be the case. There's going to be pocketing around the teeth that can be deeper and filled with bacteria. So on an initial visit, we're going to look at x-rays. We're going to look at those probe depths, just the color of the tissue in the mouth, the amount of saliva, in the mouth. Saliva is great for your teeth. So if you don't have a lot of it, that's going to kind of affect your oral health as well, and can tell us that there might be something going on systemically if you don't have a lot of saliva. There's so many factors that we consider when we look at someone's mouth to decide, like, are they healthy or not? But the main thing, like I said, is looking at the x-rays, checking the bone level, checking for decay, and then the probing depths. We want those probing depths to be healthy numbers. And if they're not, then we know that there's something going on, whether it's just maybe it's their oral hygiene needs some coaching and improvement, or maybe it is something systemic, like out of their control.
So when you say probing depth, I know that when I come in, you know, they're kind of going around my mouth and giving numbers. Is that what that is? Now, if you're, what's a good number? What's a bad number? And if your gums start bleeding during that time, if your gums are bleeding, is that a bad thing?
Your gums shouldn't bleed, right? So your gums shouldn't bleed. If you have bleeding in your mouth during brushing, flossing, or at your dental visit, there's inflammation associated with that. People I hear all the time, well, it wasn't bleeding until my hygienist stabbed me and my dentist stabbed me. And I'm like, well, no, we're actually just like barely touching your gums. They shouldn't bleed that easily. But basically, the probe depth is measured in millimeters. So a millimeter is like a very small depth. Mm-hmm. Healthy gum tissue is 3 millimeters and under, all the way around your tooth. So we'll measure it in 6 areas around each tooth. And that's going to tell us how healthy are the gums around that tooth. Sometimes for some people, if they have a history of, let's say they didn't go to the dentist for 15 years and things got really inflamed, they come in and their probing depths are really deep. They're 6 or 7 millimeters. We might get them healthy to like 5 millimeters, but sometimes you can never get back to that 3 millimeters. So for some people, we know based on their history that 4 or 5 millimeters might be healthy for them. Mm-hmm. Now, on like an average healthy patient, like we want 3 and under. 4 millimeters is kind of like headed in the wrong direction. And then anything 5 millimeters and above, we're going to be talking about a different cleaning, not just like a regular prophy that you get every 6 months. We're going to be talking about some different methods to get that bacteria out of your gums. Because if you think about it, when you brush or when you floss, you're not probably getting your floss down 5 millimeters. I mean, 5 millimeters, you'd have to have a measuring stick to see how much that is, but it's deeper than what your floss is going to go unless you're really pushing the floss down. So people will keep bacteria in their gums and just not even know it. So those probe depths tell us a lot about like how much bacteria is in here. Because if there's not any bacteria or not a lot of bacteria, then you're going to have pretty good probe depths. So that's like a really important measure to kind of, you know, address someone's oral health.
So. Yeah. So what are the dangers of that bacteria being in your mouth?
So the bacteria, if it's in your gum pocket, you know, your gums cover your bone. Mm-hmm. Your bone holds your teeth in place. So if there's bacteria long-term in a deep pocket, it's going to infect your bone. And that can cause you to get bone loss and get wiggly teeth, things you don't want. So, you know, we want to get all that bacteria out as much as possible so that the bone stays healthy and ultimately your teeth stay healthy.
Can that bacteria get into your body as well? Or does it just live in the mouth?
So it can definitely get into the bloodstream. And that's where there's a lot of talk about how oral health affects you systemically. So we've kind of always known that you know, if you have a lot of bacteria in your mouth, it can enter your bloodstream. But we recently have been finding out that the bacteria in your mouth can be found and linked to other health problems. Like they have found that the same bacteria, like the bad bacteria in your mouth, they found in atherosclerotic plaques. Like, so for people who have a heart attack from like a claw or a blocked artery, they can, on a microscopic level, look at the bacteria, and they have found that sometimes that bacteria is the same bacteria that started in your mouth. So they've kind of said over time, the same thing for like plaques in your brain for like Alzheimer's, like they can't say that it's like a causation thing. There's just
like
a correlation.
Like a direct. Yeah.
Yeah. Not like if you have periodontal disease, you're going to have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. It's a risk factor. So the more you have, the more likely you are to have bacteria in your bloodstream that can just sort of exacerbate things that might already be going on. We've always known that artificial joints like hip replacements and knee replacements and heart valve replacements could get infected from oral bacteria. So for those people who have had replacements, we will oftentimes pre-medicate them, which means that they would take an antibiotic before their dental visit for a period of time. That the guidelines have changed over time, but like 1 year, 2 year, it used to be for life, but luckily we've kind of gotten away from that. But that will help get a loading dose of antibiotics in your bloodstream so that if any bacteria is stirred up in your mouth during dental work or a cleaning, it's not going to go to your joint replacement or your heart valve and infect that. But it can happen for sure. If you're not taking care of your mouth and you've got a lot of bacteria in there and you have a heart valve that's been replaced, you could get bacteria to it and it can infect it. So it's very to, you know, if you have a joint replacement or if you know you have a history of, you know, heart disease in your family or Alzheimer's, you really want to stay on top of your oral health to help lower the risk factors for you developing those diseases.
Yeah. So what are, say you have periodontal disease, what are some of the things that may be a sign of?
So if you're doing everything right, if you're doing all the oral hygiene things that you're supposed to be doing, you're going to the dentist, but you still have periodontal disease, you still have those deep pockets, still have a lot of inflammation, it can be a sign of, you know, a vitamin deficiency in your body, like vitamin B12. Now that's usually not going to be associated with like severe periodontal disease. Usually if someone has a vitamin deficiency, it's going to show up in their mouth as like heavy inflammation. So puffy gums. Sometimes you'll get like really puffy bleeding gums, gingivitis. It's not necessarily perio disease yet. It hasn't progressed to your bone, but you still have all this inflammation and the patient's doing everything they're supposed to do, but it's still inflamed. And a lot of times, especially with vitamin B12, they'll have a really sore tongue or like a burning sensation in their tongue. And that will kind of clue us into, okay, you might need to have like your blood work done with your primary care because you might be deficient in vitamin B12. But I would say like the biggest one, the biggest kind of correlation is diabetes. If you're doing everything to keep things clean, but you're losing teeth, you have severe perio, you might have diabetes. Now, it's not going to be the first sign, though. People who have diabetes, their mouth is probably not the first thing. But my patients who do have diabetes, they struggle to stay on top of their oral health. Now, if it's controlled diabetes, maybe not so much. But the people that struggle to keep their blood sugar in check, they will oftentimes have issues with their mouth because they have issues healing. They have chronic inflammation, and just being hyperglycemic will cause bacteria to live in your mouth easier. So diabetes is a huge correlation to oral health. And so I will mention that sometimes to people if we see that things aren't getting better, I'll say, okay, there might be something else affecting this. It could be hormones. It could be a systemic disease. It could be, you know, a plethora of things, sleep apnea, a lot of things. So sometimes I'll refer them to their primary care and say, let's get a full like blood workup and like just make sure that we're not missing anything.
Right, right. Like I said, I mean, that mouth can be a huge mirror and can help you solve other underlying problems. So it's very important you stay on top of it. But yeah. I was gonna ask you, because I'm not gonna say any names, but I do know some older people who have, you know, when they get older, they don't go to the dentist as much. They're just kind of like, yeah, you know, they're gonna fall out eventually, or right, I'm gonna die before I need any real work. But it sounds like skimping on that oral care is just, it's not an option.
Yeah. It shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be, because, you know, not only could you, you know, lose your teeth, which there are lots of negative, you know, effects of that, but, you know, you could get bacteria in your bloodstream. And when, you know, our older population, you know, struggles a little more to fight infection, especially if you have an underlying condition or if you're, you know, compromised in any way with your immune system, then that you're more likely to have an issue from oral bacteria. So it's really important to stay on top of your health. But, you know, I have found that people will stay away from the dentist, like you said, like, oh, I'm just going to lose my teeth. It's fine. I'm old, whatever. But then when that actually happens, they're just like so regretful that they didn't stay on top of it, you know, because people think, well, I'll just lose my teeth. But then if they do end up losing their teeth, it's like, then it's hard to eat, then it's hard to speak, then it becomes an issue with your self-confidence and your mental health. I mean, there's so many things associated with losing teeth that I don't think people consider when they decide, okay, I'm just going to not go to the dentist anymore. And also, a lot of times what will happen with that is they don't go to the dentist and then a tooth really starts hurting them. Mm-hmm. And so then they get and be seen and it's like too late to fix it, you know, too late to help one because the tooth just has to be extracted. So always stress, staying on top of it. So much easier to be a proactive patient and be ahead of any problems that might arise than to wait till it's like hurting you and a problem. So.
Right. Right. So in that same vein, a lot of people my age, we have kids that are going out on their own and they have always relied on their moms to make their dentist appointments. How can we impress upon our kids that are leaving the house to continue with their oral care?
That's such a hard topic because like I have so many patients who are probably 19, 20, 21 in college who come in with 10 cavities because you know, they mom and dad really made them go to the dentist when they were a kid. But ultimately, when your kid turns 18 and moves out or whatever age it is, they are on their own and, you know, things fall behind. They're not brushing and taking care of things as much because no one's keeping them accountable. So it's hard. It really is, depends on the kid. But I guess as a parent, you just have to stay on them even after they're like not living under your roof. I know that like we shouldn't have to, I feel like I shouldn't as a mom have to like stay on my son to do those things, but I know I will because I know the consequences of not taking care of, you know, all things. Like you got to go to the dermatologist, you got to do this, you got to do that. Unfortunately, I think there's like an age window where we've decided this is the right age for kids to move out and be on their own. But actually, I don't know if they're like really mature enough to like do everything. We just, okay, move out, go ahead and live on your own, go to college, take care of your daughter.
Do this, do all of it.
Self, all of a sudden. So I don't know. I guess as a parent, you just have to like continue to like make sure they're, you know, getting their appointments made. But even then, I will have some patients, their parents are great and they're trying everything, but their kid doesn't show up for their cleaning, you know, or whatever. And it's like, well, but a lot of those patients, like they'll get off the tracks for a while and then they'll get a bunch of cavities and they'll come in and we'll fix them and then they'll never miss a visit ever again.
Right, so right, exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you for that because I mean, I was, you know, I kind of, you know, Mike has gotten on me because at first I was making the appointments for the kids and then he's kind of like, you know, they need to make their own. So I at least have to give them reminders to do it. So, you know, and until it becomes a natural thing for them. And then of course, most dentist office will send out a little reminder too. So, which is always good for the kids, for them to be reminded. It's been 6 months already.
Right. Yeah.
So coming back to, our aging mouths, what are some of the things, I mean, obviously just like our bodies, tend to, you know, wear as we get older. I'm sure there are things that in our mouths that change as we age. What are some of those things?
Yeah. You know, so over time we lose enamel and gum tissue. We lose a lot of things in our mouth over time that you can't stop from happening really. I mean, there are some blessed people who will be 75 and their teeth look like they're 25, but most people are going to lose enamel over time. So enamel is the outer layer of your tooth. That's the layer that you can whiten. So as we get older, it becomes harder to whiten our teeth because we've lost enamel. Our layer of your tooth that's called dentin is naturally darker. That's just, even on a young, healthy tooth, if you were to cut it open, the inside's going to be darker than the enamel. So we lose enamel over time. That's just because we bathe our mouths in acidic things over time. So even if you're, you know, not a huge coffee drinker, but you like fruit, fruit's really acidic, or, you know, there's just a lot of people have like gastric reflux, just tears their enamel apart. They have no enamel left. So when you don't have enamel, or, you know, limited enamel, you're going to be more susceptible to decay, because that inner layer of our tooth is a little softer. You also might be more susceptible to just like sensitivity to hot and cold things, because enamel is like a blanket on our teeth. And so once that's gone, it's easier for things to penetrate the inside of the tooth to the nerve and irritate things. So,
and there is no way to get enamel back, right? Or to protect the enamel we have.
Yeah, you want to protect it as much as you can by like using fluoride, you know, limiting acidic things. I'm not going to tell people not to have acidic things. I'm drinking a Diet Dr. Pepper right now. But I know because I enjoy, you know, an occasional Diet Dr. Pepper or whatever that's acidic. I'm going to drink water right after it to try to get rid of some of that acid in my mouth. And then I brush like in the middle of the day. If I'm going to have acidic things, I'll brush in the middle of the day with like a fluoride toothpaste to try to like get that pH level back in my mouth that it needs to be in, and, you know, get everything stable again. But some people just have acidic things all the time. And so, you know, they're losing enamel all the time. So you want to be proactive with protecting what you have. Cause like you said, you can't get it back. You can't get it back. So, but then the other thing over time, there's a little bit of loss of gum tissue just naturally. Like even if you have no outside factors to increase your likelihood of losing gum tissue, people lose it just a little bit over time anyways. But if you clench and grind your teeth, which so many people do, you're going to lose a little more gum tissue over time, and you're also going to just wear your teeth down. So if you look at like a young, healthy mouth, the, you know, ridges of the teeth are like nice and round. The canines have a little point to them. The gum tissue is right where we want it. But as you get older, we'll notice that the teeth are a little darker, a little worn down, might have some jagged edges where we've ground things down and might have a little less gum tissue. And there's like such a range of severity for that. Some people very little change over time, and some people like drastic change over time. So,
So what can we do to take care of our teeth, to continue to take care of our teeth? What's the best things that we can be doing?
Yeah. So you want to have a good home care routine. That's the base of everything. You got to brush twice a day. I mean, there's just no negotiating. You got to brush morning and night for 2 minutes, and you really need to floss every day. Getting out as much bacteria as possible, that's going to be the best thing. I always try to get people to use an electric toothbrush, but if you can't, that's fine. But the biggest thing is mechanical debridement of bacteria and plaque. So getting rid of that layer of bacteria that's stuck on your teeth and gums twice a day. So that's really important to do. That's one thing. Using fluoride, I'm a big advocate for using fluoride because I know what it does for your enamel. Just making sure you're using a toothpaste that has some fluoride in it. And then going to your dentist visits regularly, getting checkups so that we can get ahead of any issues that might be happening. And then a lot of times, like I recommend a bite guard for so many people. Now, not every person needs a bite guard, but a lot of people do to prevent that wear on your teeth, that loss of tooth structure, those jagged edges, the chips that people don't like. You know, wearing a bite guard is a huge help for preventing tooth problems. So.
What about flossing? Because I know a lot of people are very ashamed when they go to the dentist because they haven't been doing their flossing.
I know. It is so important. And there's all these like gimmicks out there. Like you don't have to floss. You can use this or that. Like the best thing is just a regular piece of string floss in between your teeth to get down, because your toothbrush cannot get in between your teeth. It just can't. So if you don't floss, you're always leaving some bacteria behind, and then you're always going to get a little bleeding when you do floss. You know, people are like, well, it bleeds every time I floss. Well, if you just keep doing it, it will get better, because we got to get rid of that bacteria that's been stuck in between there for a while. So
yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you about, you mentioned medications earlier, because sometimes medications affect what's going on in your mouth, right? How is that?
Actually, like a lot of medications cause dry mouth. Unfortunately, like most all medications, they will help you with something but hurt you in another area.
Right.
So a lot of medications cause dry mouth, and dry mouth will make you more susceptible to decay. But so like blood pressure medications, I mean, so many people are on blood pressure medication. That's going to, you know, give you dry mouth, as well as like benzodiazepines for like anxiety, Valium and Xanax. They definitely can give you dry mouth. Antidepressants, even antihistamines like Allegra and Claritin, they can dry your mouth out. So a lot of people are on medications that they don't even realize, like, this is going to affect my teeth. But if you have dry mouth, you've got to drink more water. You know, if you can tell, most people can tell they have dry mouth. They're like, they have that sticky feeling in their mouth. They wake up in the middle of the night, they're so thirsty. So drinking a lot of water, but there's also some products on the market that are helpful for dry mouth. There's biotin. They make like a rinse, a gel, and a toothpaste. So if you're on those medications and you think you might have dry mouth, it would be helpful to look into the biotin products. My patients who have severe dry mouth, now those are going to be people who have had like chemotherapy and radiation to the head and neck. They're going to have like little to no saliva. We can actually put them on a medication to help their salivary glands produce more saliva to help them. But for most people, the dry mouth from medications shouldn't be severe. It's just going to be noticeable. And so using those extra products and then drinking a ton of water is really all you can do to stay ahead of it. Because, I mean, you can't stop taking your blood pressure medication right. If you have high blood pressure. You know, you still have to take it. You just have to deal with, like, what it might be also affecting. So,
Right. So another thing I wanted to ask you about is cancer. You know, We're all so keen to check our skin and do a skin check. And, you know, the pictures of melanoma, and we kind of know what it looks like. But what about mouth and oral cancer? What do we need to be looking for in our mouths?
Yeah. You know, that's like a great topic to bring up, because people don't think about oral cancer really at all as like one of the like big cancers that they, you know, afraid of or whatever. But it's one of the most deadly. I mean, if you get oral cancer, now it's not super prevalent, but if you get it, I mean, the treatments are so intense. A lot of people lose like part of their tongue, and then their speech and their eating is like really diminished. So with oral cancer, you know, your dentist should be looking for it. And I remember like when I started in practice, I would do hygiene checks and I would say, okay, stick your tongue out. And people were like, what? Why? You know,
that's not my mouth. It's like, it's in your mouth. Yeah.
Lift your tongue up to the roof of your mouth. And they're like, they look at me like, why? I'm like, because I, you know, want to check and make sure that we're not missing anything. Because a lot of times people will know, they'll notice like a bump in their mouth or something that's sore that just will not get better. Mm-hmm. And they'll come in, but you can actually see things before it gets to that point if you're checking regularly. So it's just kind of like, you know, your doctor will tell you to do a breast exam for breast cancer. You can check your mouth. Most oral cancers start under the tongue or in the floor of the mouth, the sides of the tongue, and then sometimes in the roof of the mouth. It's like, those are the most common areas. You can get it anywhere in your mouth, but those are the most common. So if you develop a bump anywhere that is red and white, a mixture of red and white, and it's just not going away after like 2 weeks, you should probably have it checked out. Now, there's a lot of things in the mouth that are bumps like that that are totally fine, that aren't cancer. So don't freak out if you get a bump in your mouth that's been there, like, oh my gosh, I heard on this podcast that means I have cancer. Like, no, you have cancer, but it is something to look for, because occasionally I'll have a patient's like, yeah, I've had this bump on my tongue for like 6 months. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I need to know about that. And a lot of times they're fine too, but it's just something to definitely be looking out for. It's just like either, and sometimes it's not a bump. Sometimes it's totally flat, but it's something that is noticeably red and white and it's just not going away. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Always very important. And yeah, those are, I mean, that's good. I've never actually checked, and I've had bumps inside my mouth, but yeah, you know, it's very good to be aware of what's going on everywhere in your body.
Absolutely.
So last question for you. Do you have any last advice, or what is your best advice on aging oral health?
My best advice. I mean, I feel like this is just so cliche to say, but go to the dentist.
It's that easy. Like,
that easy, because like so many things can be fixed way before they're a major problem, you know, and not all dentists are bad. Find a good dentist that you trust and stick with them. I mean, I swear I hear a horror story every day and I'm just like, what are we doing out here? People, come on, get it together. Be nice to people. That's all it takes, is just be kind to people. Right. But go to your dentist regularly, stay on top of your checkups. And then, like I said, just never letting up on your home care, even when, you know, you're going through a stressful time in your life or whatever, you can't stop brushing. Cause I hear that all the time. Like I didn't brush for a while, or I wasn't taking as good a care of my mouth because this was going on. So just trying to always prioritize, you know, those fundamental things at home, brushing and flossing. So
love it. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I mean, this has been some great information. I guarantee you that everyone that listens learned at least one thing today.
Oh, I hope so. Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. This is my first podcast appearance, and I feel like, you know, it was fun. It was really fun.
you should do it again. You did great.
Good.
I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Meyer today. My family and I love working with her. She took over from our old dentist who retired, and she's been a blessing. She's done a great job, and I am wishing her all of the luck with the birth of her second child. She is going to do great. I know it. I hope that you have learned something in today's conversation, and I encourage you to do some further research and become even more proactive in your oral care, especially as you go through midlife. Like Dr. Meyer said, if you don't, you'll more than likely regret it at some point. Here are a couple of the top line takeaways from today. Number one, protect the outer layer of your teeth. That is the enamel. Protect it as long as possible, because once it is gone, you cannot get it back. Number two, your gums should not bleed. If they do, then there is some sort of inflammation there, and inflammation means bacteria. Number three, flossing is important to get out all of the bacteria that the toothbrush can't reach. Number four, certain medications like blood pressure medication can create dry mouth and tooth decay. Be aware, drink lots of water, or use products like biotin. Number five, if you have a red and white spot or bump in your mouth that has been there for a while, make sure to have your dentist check that out. That's your cancer check. Number six, have a good home care routine for oral care. Brush twice a day, floss, and go to your dentist so that they can get ahead of any issues before they become issues. All right. Thank you for listening in today. I so appreciate it and would love for you to roll on down to the bottom of the show page and rate and or review this podcast and let us know what hit you from this conversation today. I'd love to be able to go back to Jamie and give her some feedback from you. And make sure to find me at my website for all things fitness and nutrition coaching in midlife. The Midlife in Motion program, as well as you can find the Friday Night Beer blog there. My website is www.leslielmcshane.com. And then come and join us in the Redesigning Midlife private Facebook group, where we are in community together, all of us midlife women, and we're encouraging each other to live our best lives and just lifting each other up and reminding each other how awesome we are, because we are. The links to all these things are going to be in the show notes, so I encourage you to go there and find it all. Till the next time that we are together, remember to show as much compassion to others as you yourself need today. I want you to go out and kill it today. Till next time. See ya. Bye.